Okay. We're good.
I need you to go to your next section now, labeled expenditures and budget considerations. And so you've got a document in there that Keith's going to take some time to go on the top on the left-hand side, and then we'll get to this other side of that document, additional staffing requests to consider that I will work with us on, and some of our other folks here will help with that. So, Keith?
Okay. I've said this a couple times already today. We're in a better spot than we were last year at this time. You can see this is what I'm projecting our fund balances will be at the end of this year. In the general fund, we started out this year at 5.1 million. I think we're going to go to 5.4. Capital is the biggest growth. We're going to go from just over 5 to just over 6. Debt service, again, that's a wash. Special revenue, we're going to grow a little bit, and the biggest reason for that is we're done building Old Mill Park, finally. Food services is going to about break even this year. So as a whole, our fund balances across all the funds are going to go from 13.2 million to 14.7. That's that 1.5 million that was on that other slide. So that's a great place to start from. And then to help matters even more are the increases in our revenues that we're anticipating next year. Just from the growth, housing starts and building projects that are going on in the county, I think we can...
Sorry.
We can anticipate some growth in local revenue just by going with the certified. That's not doing a truth and taxation hearing. That's just from growth.
Which we get just to keep.
We get to keep all
yes.
the growth.
Right.
Is that the 5%? Are you figuring in the 5%? I thought you said it was 5% extra for growth that they're giving us, or 5 million, 5,000, what is it?
55,000.
This is in addition to that.
That. You're talking state revenues. This
yeah.
is local property.
This is local.
Yes.
Local.
Okay. Yes. And then there's that growth in state revenues, 1,447,000. That will actually go up a little bit more as we get those other four items allocated. But that's what it is as of now, 1,447,000. There's the 5% reduction in federal revenues. So the total revenue increase will be about 1.8 million once that other state revenue gets allocated. Right now it's 1.707. Now the problem with that is just the built-in expenditure increases that we're facing next year that will wipe that out, basically. Steppen Lane costs us around $425,000. That's just giving Steppen Lane to all three, to teachers, classified administrators. The retirement increase, and this goes back to when the Utah retirement system was so underfunded. It wasn't as bad off as some of the states, but we've had to increase that portion that we pay on everybody's gross, everybody who's eligible for retirement. It's going to go up 1.7% next year, which pretty much, I mean, that's almost a 1%. It's almost equivalent to 1% on the base salary. So you can see that's going to cost $383,000 just to fund that. This is the big heartburn that I'm facing right now, and I feel bad that I wish this meeting had been tomorrow and tomorrow's meeting had been today, because I have a meeting with the insurance people tomorrow down in Salt Lake, and but we have to do something with that. right now we're looking at an 18.5% increase to our premiums, which is over $1 million. Right now we pay $5.7 million every year in medical and dental premiums. It'll go to 6.7 next year.
In that meeting tomorrow, will they break us out as an individual district?
No, they never do that in this pool.
That's part of the pool. They can't do that.
And are we stuck to the pool, or if they really aren't going to do something, can we?
Talk about why the pool is significant for us.
You're talking to the wrong guy. I was in on making this pool. So we're not big enough, in my view. We have 400 people. We're not big enough to go off on our own.
Okay.
So I don't
know. And our pool has been the lowest in the state for years.
But would we look, if the pool number comes in at that, would you have
partner? Well, we'd have to break ourselves off.
And then go out to bid.
And then go out to bid. And I can tell you right now, there's a number of school districts that have jumped up, would jump to join this pool, and a number have been rejected from joining this pool over the years.
Yeah, we get three or four districts every year trying to join. They have to show us what their history has been as far as claims. And we've only allowed one school district to join, and that's Duchesne, because they had a good claims history. But we wouldn't allow... There's been, every year we get requests from other districts that want to join, and we won't let them because they don't have good history.
More questions on this?
In the last several years, we've received a rebate. Is that based on our district's utilization, or is that, again, the whole pool?
That was the whole pool.
The whole pool.
We have a pretty significant fund balance as a pool.
Which is good.
Would there be interest in them using the fund balance
and
to offset some of this?
That'll be part of tomorrow's discussion. There will be some plan changes that we'll talk about that will get that 18.5% down. We might have to bump up deductibles. I'm going to make a recommendation. Right now, see, this pool was formed in 1999. And at the time, the Silver Advantage plan with dental cost exactly the same as the Gold Advantage plan without dental. And so back then we said, okay, we'll give the employees a choice. They can choose Gold Advantage without or Silver Advantage with dental. I think it's time to drop that. For one thing, the price difference has grown to over $100 for a family each month.
Gold Advantage is so which
Gold Advantage is far more expensive. Well, is $100 a month more for a family than Silver Advantage with dental?
Okay.
I'm going to recommend right now that we drop dental, and we just fund the Silver Advantage, which is still an 80-20 plan. It's still top-notch when you compare it to industry outside of school districts.
How much will it cost our teachers to replace that?
About $100 a month for a family.
Okay.
It's 106 for a family, 67 for a couple, and 37 for an individual.
Okay. You'll still give them option of going to Gold.
Oh, they can buy it.
They can still buy dental through the plan. Right.
But in negotiations, what they're going to say to us is that's $100 a month pay cut. Yep.
That's exactly what they'll say.
So that's where I want to get the
district $348,000.
Okay, and that's fine. I just want to know what it cost them. $106. Okay.
And again,
just to buy Gold.
We are...
Hold on, Keith. The difference between Gold and Silver Advantage with dental right now is about that same amount, right? Mm-hmm.
But if they were to buy... If we just go Silver, they would have to buy dental and the Gold.
Yes.
And that's not... The two together are $100.
That'd be at least $200.
But we don't fund Gold and dental. But we don't fund the dental. So it's $100 either way. If you're if you're at the Gold, we're taking $100 away because we're moving you down to the Silver.
Okay.
Or if you're Silver, we're taking the dental away. So we're taking $100 from everybody.
But if someone wanted to have...
Is that,
that's
but if someone wants dental,
they can buy whatever they want.
Yeah. And gold is $200.
Yeah.
Okay. That's
they can buy up if they want to. He's recommending that instead of having silver with dental paid for, that we pay for silver. Everything else is
saving us $100 per plate. That's logical.
It's saving us that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And again, we're one of the few districts in the state that do not do this next part, the premium participation.
I asked him to put that in there so we have some idea of what the savings would be if we went that direction.
So
what would it cost us?
So the fact that we dropped dental, we're still, you know, a mile ahead of where other districts are.
Right.
Because other districts, they're paying, you know, 10-15% of the silver, and dental was never part of it.
In other words, if we asked the folks to pay 10% of the premium, we would save $577,000.
Is that after you took out the dental
10% of a premium.
Gold?
Which is what? What's 10% of the silver? Because it's the silver? What's 10% of silver?
Of the silver?
What's it going to cost them?
I didn't bring my insurance rates. It's $16,000 for a family.
So it'd be $1,600 a year.
So it's $140-$150 a month.
Right.
Yes.
And that's in additional savings if we, this line would be,
right.
Are you proposing that as an option?
We put it here for a conversation with you. Okay. These are ways that we can save.
One or two or all
revenues.
Or
we can save revenues for other things.
So
make sense to you by making these budget cuts in these other areas.
So the $577,000
it could be that.
But are you saying it's separate? You'd keep the gold. I mean, or
no? They'd be paying that on the
premium
on the silver,
whatever premium they elect.
Whatever premium they elect.
They'd be paying that on the silver, and then still having to buy up the gold if they want.
Okay. Now, I want to make sure that you're clear. He made a recommendation. He's not necessarily saying the same thing about the second item here.
I understand.
No, I'm not recommending this.
We're showing you what it is.
It is time to do that first. It is time to do that first.
These are our options.
Yeah.
Especially,
that's right.
More and more people are catching on to the fact that they're paying a lot for dental by buying up the gold with dental. And so I'm getting pressure from people saying, no, that's not what it costs. But that's what it's always been historically. So I'm saying it's time to drop it and just go in with silver.
And I think we ought to look at what raising the deductible, how much that would drop, that 18.5%.
I'll know that after tomorrow.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
But obviously, I'd like to see those numbers.
And we'll have that, obviously. We'll know that before we go into negotiations with these bodies.
Okay. The next items are just... these were on the sheet that we handed out last year at this time. We were faced with some significant cuts we had to make, or we had to at least consider... if we did away with a professional day or two, it'd be $100,000 a day, and there are five of those built into the calendar, two at the start of the school year, and then one at the end of the first, second, third term. If we were able to reduce FTEs...
with 6% growth.
That's fine.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's why I smile.
And moving on to the next line item.
The table.
Yeah, so that's not... obviously an option when you're growing as fast as we're growing.
That's how much it would be.
And Eric, you're probably begging for more specialists.
And,
but go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. On to the next item.
That's right there.
Okay.
We have a lot of aides. If we reduced... last year we were talking about reducing at 11 aides. That would save about $200,000. And then I'm not recommending that we make... I'm just pointing out to you guys.
These are unfunded.
These positions that we've added at the elementary schools, and by the way, maybe Park City has these positions, but nobody else I know of our size has PE specialists or computer. Sorry, that got cut off. I was supposed to say teacher there, obviously. Nobody else has computer teachers at the elementary schools. Nobody has media, certified media people. Some districts don't even have it in the high school, let alone in the elementary school. We have a great gifted and talented program that not many people have. And then we have counselors in the elementary schools, which I'm not recommending we cut those, obviously, because they do so much for
the
principal.
May I ask a question about that?
But there's no funding attached from the state. That's all local revenue that we use to do that.
Would the perception be horrible if, I'm not saying we're going to do this, but if we decided to say, okay, we're not going to have media personnel because I'd rather have a certified music teacher in there, can we put that media personnel back as a classroom, or can we legally not do that if they have a position?
Depends on what their license is, Debbie. If they're a licensed elementary teacher and we had a place to put them, we could put them in another place. If they're tenured and licensed, then we're obligated to put them in another place.
All of them are tenured. They've all been with
us
forever.
All of them have been there. I'm just saying, if we made the decision, not that we are, but if we made a decision that the need was stronger to have a technology person than a library person,
if it's an elementary licensed teacher that was doing media and had a media license, but we wanted him to do technology, we'd have to train him.
No, I'm not saying we want him to do technology, but we just
need to move him back into
the back into a classroom.
All of them came from the classroom.
So we can
all of them that are
PE teachers,
were teachers, and then got their media certification.
Right. And all I'm saying is, if we have openings to put them in, we can put them there.
Especially if they speak.
I've had practices for a couple of years.
Okay.
It's a good question.
So those are some possible ways to save some money. And then just so it's a little more clear, you can see that we're adding $324,000 to our fund balance this year. So that helps us as we consider this list over here. Because if we did nothing different, we would do that same thing again next year. So that can go towards this. You know, these things are pretty much a wash. So we got to, if we're going
to
do some of this stuff,
we have to
do some of this stuff.
So that could go to that list twice, really, for this year and next, right?
Well, if you want to use fund balance.
I mean that's what you're...
That's one-time funds.
If you do it that way, though, it puts you in a hole because you're using
one-time
money.
If we didn't do it, we'd save that much next year. We'd add that much to the fund balance next year, like we did this year.
That's what you're saying, yeah.
And then, just so you can see where our salaries and wages, our salaries and benefits, at the end of last fiscal year, we had spent $34.5 million. This year, it went up almost $850,000, most of it in benefits because of the retirement and health insurance increases that we're faced with every year. So, any questions on any of that? If not, I'm going to go home.
No.
Nice try.
Because I've had this next discussion. We met, the six of us met for 6 hours the Tuesday after we got home from San Diego.
The list was longer than that.
And came up. Actually, that is the list.
Is that everybody?
Yeah.
That's the list.
Okay.
Not all of which we
want to ask for.
All right.
That's a good thing.
What we wanted to put before you was the things that we had considered, things that you may have been hearing also from other people in other settings or whatever, things that others might think are necessary too. So what I'm going to do is ask different individuals to talk about the different items up here so that you get the information that we have. And then we'll, again, towards, obviously, later, we're going to talk about things are more important than other things, and that's a conversation we do together here. So if Jim would take these first.
Three,
please.
I'm super deaf. I need to point out, those those are in no particular order.
Okay.
Yes. There is no significance to how they're.
This is just the conversation that we had about these things. So
the way we were seated around the table.
Yeah,
when we brought
that's all
up
it
some
is.
Issues.
Okay. But, go ahead.
But as we talk about this, I guess this is me individually. I don't know if it'll work. I guess I would like to kind of have some idea of priority from your perspective. Okay.
And we're ready to give that to you.
Okay. Thanks.
So, as we frame this, like Keith said, this was a six-hour conversation, knowing cuts, knowing what people want. And we do have a list of what we feel are top priorities.
It might not.
Okay, the first one to me is a transportation secretary. The transportation world has been my learning curve this year, and it is quite a process every day. It has grown. That percentage that you see growth is hitting transportation as hard as it hits everybody. And she is transporting over 3,500 students a day with a staff of over 50 people. She is to the point where it is getting very difficult to manage that without getting some type of help with things like payroll, the managing of who's here and who's absent and the subs. All that stuff is done internally in their office, whereas other in our schools, that is done through other things. Subs is handled through a secretary at the district office or through Kelly Services. Payrolls are handled by secretaries. The complexity of routing, and every one of these kids that moves in, especially if they're special needs kids, adds a whole nother wave of complexity to the bus routes, and it's getting to the point where the growth out there is getting very difficult to manage, and it is time to get her a secretary, an additional secretary. She has one.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't we have one?
She has one, and part of that secretary's duties right now is also dispatch. So the buses are always constantly on the dispatch, which ties that secretary to the dispatching of buses because they're constantly giving forth information back and forth through the bus route. So that's what that is an additional secretary to help with the growth at the bus garage.
Full time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, would it be 260 days?
Okay, yeah. So a district secretary is all year. This would be like a school-level secretary that would be, I believe, it's 200
days. 200
days. 200
and days. Does that reflect that?
Yes.
Is that 42,000?
Yeah. We have, again, just with the growth, and a lot of these things you'll see are tied to that issue, we have two maintenance tech lanes, a tech one and a tech two. And all of our maintenance people fall into one of those categories. As we've gotten bigger and better at certain things, we now are in a position where it's more cost effective for things like electrical to have a full-time electrician, which we do, rather than going out and hiring people to come in because we're getting to the size where we can employ that. The problem with those types of people, and in this district now we're talking about two individuals who would qualify for this type of thing, the problem in hiring those more qualified people is the market is better paying outside of the district if we don't increase to an additional tech lane to attract those people. So these are people like, it could be plumbers, electricians, other type of journeymen, people with certain technology expertise, like Zach Bredsgard runs all of our surveillance and has now been trained to be the manager of all of our surveillance equipment. So we're not hiring out to do the maintenance on that type of stuff. And then the third one there.
So
yeah.
What is it we're actually adding for 14,000?
So it's
person,
another lane.
It's another lane, and so
it just
right
changes
now,
the pay for that lane up.
So we're not adding a position.
No.
Just, it
right. We have two people now in-house.
Okay.
that based on the job description that Francis has written for that,
they
would qualify as Tech 3.
Okay.
And the key is that term, the journeyman. I mean, these guys are qualified to to be out doing it as a private business.
Okay.
And it's typical with larger districts. Alpine has something like 18 different types of techs based on education and experience. And it's typical in that world to have a lane for the people who have some type of training specific to their job. Sweepers, you guys see the hires and fires every month, and you see that half of them are sweepers.
Every month.
It's very difficult to keep sweepers. There's a lot of compounding issues. We keep them under 20 hours, so they can't make more than 20 hours. And we start them off at $8 an hour, which with the other industries that compete with that, they pay more than that. Or they have some additional benefit.
So what would it raise them to?
Well, that cost there is raising them to 10, which is, I went over and just talked to the different hotels that have a cleaning type position, and they either have that kind of a salary or some type of a benefit, or they can work 40 hours. Okay, those are my three.
Jim, one problem with that, though, is if you raise the sweepers to 10, we'd have to raise PA1s. Right now they start at 9.29.
We'd have to raise those.
There would be a little ripple go through the whole system on a couple positions. I don't think cooks start out at 10.
I don't think any of those A type positions.
Yeah. PA2s do, but PA1s
don't.
That's
right.
And the challenge we have, those sweeper positions used to be minimum wage positions. That's where they were for many years until Keith, I'm not sure when we made this change, but it's been a few years ago now.
Do you think if we raise that would cut down on the turnover where it's a part-time position anyway?
Well, one of the options that I explored is going through Kelly Services with them. Kelly Services can work in 40 hours because they...
I asked him to do this, to look at a private option.
Because they give a benefit with it. It becomes even more expensive than that, though, if we do it.
It's cost plus.
And I guess in the sake of time, we've already nixed that off the priority list. That helps you ease your mind.
We drew a line through this.
Let's just hold off on those.
Okay,
things.
I won't say anything else about the priority.
Let's let them all stand on their own, so it's still on there.
We'll let you speak again, though.
Okay.
I nixed, just for your sake, I nixed.
I just saw this going into a half-hour discussion. Knowing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yes.
Yeah.
No,
yes.
It does.
No, knowing that we've already...
Okay, Eric, will you take CFA and, let's see, dual immersion? How about those two right now?
Okay. I'll start with dual immersion. That's one that at our last board meeting was one that it's already opened and
basically have already
done
that.
So
thank you.
So that was number
one
on our
priority
list.
It's already done. So we need to
get
it. Start.
Don't talk about the list.
Well, we've already hired a person.
I got to start by now. Circle.
Any more discussion on this one? Okay. CFA might deserve a little more explanation. Traditionally, in the partnership with BYU, all the five partnerships, there is a CFA and I have to say this carefully because Jim laughs at me every time, a liaison from
CFA
BYU.
CFA stands for Clinical Faculty Associate.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Now, that is typically a person that is hired from the district that has that connection with BYU, with pre-service teachers and working with the facilitators and new teachers within the district.
So we have CFAs every year.
We do not.
No.
And we haven't for a number of years.
Okay.
BYU has sent different people up to kind of fill in some of those roles because we have not had a CFA, I would say, for about 7 years.
We've never had a CFA.
Paula V. Kerr was our last one.
So could you give me I just am having a hard time wrapping my brain around how they're different than the interns that we have.
Okay. Facilitators work with the building with typically two interns, okay, and also at the discretion of the principals to work on PD.
But don't we have those like Teresa,
That's right. Those are all facilitators. A CFA is someone that coordinates with them. A CFA is someone that goes down to BYU and works with the liaison at BYU, teaching some classes and building that connection with our district. We haven't had that. When I talk to the elementary principals, their biggest concern is new teacher training, including those interns, though they're taking care of really well. But what they want for their new teachers is exactly what those interns are getting.
So once the interns leave a Teresa or whoever,
they're on their own.
They're on their own.
Correct.
And they have no support.
That's right. And those that we hired that didn't come through BYU, from day one, it's sink or swim. When it comes to, and there's a lot of curriculum at the elementary level, they have multiple preps. You have treasures and vision, the science curriculum, the social science curriculum, all of these things
they're all
that they're
away
doing.
If you get your way, though, because we're going to have a technology person.
They still have to learn what the curriculum is. I mean, the integration
so
is teaching how to use the technology.
No support would not be the correct way of putting it. I'm going to correct Aaron. Okay? There is support. It's limited support. The support would be from the teachers on the grade level, the teachers in the department for new teachers. They would say, he would say, I would say, we would all say it's limited because they already have full-time jobs.
Yeah.
They already have classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're doing. So it's not nearly what it needs to be. What the CFA allows for is for that great big gap between where they're currently at and working with their own departments and teams and what could be provided on a school district level.
Correct.
So do we ask questions if we have questions still about that? So has there been positive from schools that you see that have had CFAs and used them? Is there, what do you say makes them better? Is the less turnover for new teachers, better test scores? What's going to make it better if we go that route?
I mean,
the morale of teachers, obviously. And
okay.
They're having,
in particular, what not having one of those is doing, and Superintendent is correct in saying there is limited support from their teams. That comes during the PLC time. While we're spending a lot of our time, instead of addressing those four questions, critical needs of kids, we're spending a lot of time saying, oh, well, here's the curriculum. Yeah, you don't know that yet. And so we're wasting, in my mind, a lot of that PLC time that we're trying to dedicate getting new teachers up to speed with stuff that they should already know and not addressing student needs.
So you think they're not coming as prepared teachers?
I guess what I'm saying is this is an issue that all districts deal with new teachers and how do you train them. Our district has not had a systematic new teacher induction like the other districts that we're working with. They all do it in different ways. We're seeing a CFA as one way for, again, in our district, for one person to wear multiple hats because there's multiple needs here. There's the need for someone working with pre-service teachers and making sure we're getting the best ones up here to start with for baseline. They would not just be working with BYU, would also be working with UVU and all and those programs also. And Western Governors, whatever college we want to work with, we want to make sure that those pre-service teachers doing their cohort experience, doing a student teaching experience, or doing an intern experience all have high caliber training. So if we do want to hire them, we're hiring the best that we've already put effort into. The other issue is new teachers that don't come through that route also need that help. So as you see up there, the 35,000 is not a full-time FTE. We're proposing that we use our Title II monies for half of that, which is for teacher improvement, and we're asking for the other half to fulfill one role that would coordinate all the facilitators, coordinate new teacher induction and training for all of our teachers over multiple years. They would be helping with the I requirements, and again at the elementary level.
Explain what I is.
Those
early years, enhancements. It's teachers who are brand new. They have to commit to a certain amount of expectation and training and different professional growth things in order to go from a level one license to a level two. They can't continue having a teaching license if they don't upgrade to a level two. Part of the I requirements is a mentor training induction program. That what he's saying is most districts use people like a CFA to help those teachers through those first years. We have not. We've been limited.
Is that what Vicki's been doing before you took over the job?
Well,
what she tried to do, but it was in
what Vicki does is tell, and what I continue to do
is say, keep them in compliance.
Keep them in compliance of their I requirements.
Okay.
But I don't do any of the coaching or support.
Okay. Do we are at the time, like I know Teresa's at Heber Valley, do we have someone for new interns at each school? Or does Teresa go to different schools?
No, she stays just at those.
Explain how the intern program works and how the facilitator ties to that through what you're saying.
At every elementary school, there are two interns. Okay? Either BYU or UVU. Their salaries pay for a facilitator at that school to work with them. In our program, that the responsibilities of that individual, the facilitator, Teresa, would be that for the first half of the year, they are in those classrooms. They are actually the teacher of record. The intern is not. So Teresa Woodman is the actual teacher of record. She's actually in those two rooms for the half of the year, 50% of the time in each of those rooms, as they are doing that gradual release with those interns to make sure that they have the skills they need for those students in that classroom to do well. Second half of the year, as they pull out, then they are duties as assigned by the principal, which includes professional development and a whole list of other things. Just
so,
depending on
my question I'm getting to is, would is her role as that too much to be given some more assignments in tutoring?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I meet with them on a weekly basis, and they're feeling it. Especially
this is a requirement to be part of the BYU Public School Partnership. If you're going to be part of the partnership, you're going
to
have facilitators released like we talked about here, and interns. And it was here when I got here. It's been part of the work with those school districts attached to the partnerships since the early 1990s. So it's been a long-standing program.
And a good thing, I know.
And a wonderful thing.
We hire a lot of those interns. We put the time and effort into them, and again, the better we recruit, and the better that connection, the better the situation will be for us. And we're just hiring high-caliber teachers for our kids.
Thank you.
And the other thing is, having a CFA is something that I've been able to manage doing it differently all these years, and having BYU contribute the ways they've been contributing for the last 12 years towards this. But now we're growing sufficiently, and BYU is saying to us, we really think you ought to have a CFA just like the other school districts in the partnership. That needs to be also here sitting on the table.
The other thing with our growth is we are getting more kids coming up to BYU for those cohort experiences, and we
explain
need people
what
over that.
Is.
A cohort is... they're required to come up so many weeks and do certain activities in a class. They don't take over the class, but under a mentor teacher. Those mentor teachers have really not been supported either. We just throw a couple of kids in their class, and they say they need to get these assignments done. That's something that we feel we could do a much better job, because that does two things. One, we are making sure that potentials coming to our district are trained by our district. We also are making sure that our teachers that are these mentors are being reinfused with the new latest and greatest of the research. I mean, it's kind of going back to kind of the medical school type model, which is how that intern and cohort programs are set up, where you have an infusion with your veteran teachers' new stuff, but they're also mentoring on this is how it's done also. So it's a dual benefit that way. And those mentors kids right now, there's no one really coordinating that other than these are the rooms they're going in, as opposed to let us train you on how to help those pre-service teachers be most successful in that situation and how to look for ones that are promising, and we need that information back. Any other questions regarding that? Again, this is less than what other districts are doing, but it's a step towards where they're at and what we're hoping to do to accomplish that work with training new teachers and making sure pre-service teachers are at a point where we are ready to hire them.
Any other questions about that? Did that help, guys? That's mm-hmm. We haven't spent a lot of time talking about the partnership and this level of things that we do in the school district, so we need to do that, I think, in another meeting. But one of the things I've given you in the other handouts I've given you is the agenda for those. All of you are going to be going to the meeting on May. Some of you are going to be there May 2nd. All of the rest of you will be there, so that we're all together on May 3rd. That's also sitting in the agenda of materials that you've got in this, too, if you'll just look back.
Can I say one more thing that I'll be remiss to say?
We won't say a lot about, excuse me, Eric, we won't get into this level of detail there, but I'm saying we may need to spend a little more time on this with you at another time.
The bottom line with the CFA is because BYU is setting up their people, they are not connected to Wasatch to do some of these job descriptions, that teaching these new teachers the Wasatch way, because we are unique and we are special, we don't have that benefit without having that CFA too. For us to have a school district person saying, this is Wasatch, we understand what BYU wants from you, and we're going to take that and tailor that to this is Wasatch, and that's something that we're...
But I think Rory says we're Wasatch because I see how many people are applying to come here.
Yes, but then the onus is then on the PLCs to get these people up to speed. Does that make sense? We're hiring them, and they're coming, but
they're still not up to speed.
But once
where
they're
we
here,
want them to be.
They're like, okay, well, never heard of Treasures before, so we spent weeks.
Well, you've got to right now. That's meeting an hour
trying to get them
up. Sure.
Yeah, you get a new employee there without a new teacher induction program. That new employee now takes. The PLC goes backward for a month to train the new employee on what we do there. This is trying to help prevent some of that stuff.
Okay. Any other questions about that? Thank you. Carl, talk about IT.
Yes, we have one of our techs that is working for us now. He's actually just a two-day-a-week tech. It's Phil Thacker that's retiring this year, and we need to replace him, but we're also, you can tell with technology that's going on, we're growing as it were.
I mean, like putting a ton more on your bike?
Yes. And we need the expansion. We need another full-time tech in his place. With him being just 2 days a week, it isn't enough for us right now. We should need a full-time tech person to help us expand. You know, one of the reasons why we came in early this year with netbooks is we want to get them in and get moving with the imaging and get things working and get these through the system so that we're prepared for them. You know, we usually wait till after July 1 and get things working with the system, but it's really taking a lot longer for us to get everything ready with. With the new teachers coming on board, we want to have the laptops for our new teachers so that they're in their hands when they're coming in. We just need to help.
So right now you have a full time and then another employee that's 2 days.
Well, no,
this is to take. This we're is, already paying for 2 days. This is to pay for the other three.
This is to
pay
for
the
full
time.
Yeah.
And then you'll replace Phil.
Yeah, this
in
will
addition.
Replace Phil.
This will replace
this. This will
with
replace
a full-time person rather than a 40% person.
He's 2 days a week, and now he's going to put his salary plus the $40,000 and make it a full-time person.
Yes,
Phil's only 2 days a week,
right?
Yeah. I didn't know if we're talking about that. Tim and Phil weren't that.
It will just make it a full-time
position. A full-time one position.
From a 40% up to a full-time.
Okay.
Any questions about that? Okay, I want to move to, we've had conversations about PR. We can come back to that later in the conversation at some appropriate time here later if we might need to. I want to talk a little bit about the high school. To me, this is a given. The high school is looking at increasing FTE in all of the core areas, one teacher in science, social studies area, math, and English, because of growth. And as we've looked at it, Jim and I've looked at it, we've met with the high school. Frankly, for many years now, we have been asking them generally to increase class size. We've kind of held their class size pretty static. Not class size, their FTE staff static. At the same time, that school's been growing. And we believe this is the year to go ahead and deal with that increase in FTE. So with that, and with the additional students that we have, also comes, and with the additional students at Rocky Mountain Middle School, also come the need for additional counselors so that we can meet the guidelines set for counseling ratios. So I'm going to have Jason talk about that, and if you want to come back and talk more about the high school need for teachers there, we can do that too. But Jason, talk about that, please.
The current, Jill, you have that put up there real quick. See the ratios. The counselor listed there is actually half-time, would be half-time at the middle school, half-time at the high school. Our current ratios, go down the second page on that if you would, Jill. Our current ratios, you can see there, at the high school and high school north, with this year's October 1 count, is 1 to 370, middle school 1 to 425. Comprehensive guidance requires you to have no more than 1 to 350. We've been able to kind of get around that for a while because when we add in our district at-risk counselor, when we have, you know, the Jody or Annette, that brings the ratio down to 1 to 335. As comprehensive guidance changes and moves to more getting kids college and career ready, they're reducing the amount of time they ask counselors to spend in responsive services. And so the vast majority of the time that Jody and or Annette put in would if they weren't there, really, we would be referring those kids to other sources. So they're not really reducing the workload of a counselor anymore like they may have when they started. We have more and more of these types of needs, and they're still providing a crucial service for us. To get us down into the proper ratio for comprehensive guidance, and we do have our comprehensive guidance evaluation reviews next year, the half proposed counselor at the high school and half at the middle school would bring them both down to about 1 to 340. You can see on the bottom portion of that chart, which again gets us below the 1 to 350. And we're just asking counselors to do more and more and more. And with the growth of the school, at the high school, since we opened the new school, they're up over 300 kids. And really, we haven't added any counseling staff there for, you know, since that time. And so that would be the proposal to add half each of those schools.
We haven't had teachers too, have we?
Well, not in the same way that being discussed here.
Jill, pull up that sheet again. The reason.
This one?
Yeah. The reason for this is because high school grew 170 kids last year with the same staff.
Yeah.
So. Right. And when we moved to the high school, we trimmed out three when we moved to the new school. Sue Piper, there were two others that retired that we didn't replace. That was the first year of the big cut. We have added some prep periods along the way.
Not to meet the growth. No, we have not.
Right. Okay. Any other questions about that? Okay. Some other things that are on this list here. Keith has already given you what the cost of a base salary increase for 1% is. You see it there on the
superintendent, what's the number just to the right of the three?
That's the sum of everything
up here.
Oh, okay.
Right here?
Yes.
Is that what that is?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Now, other things that we had that we discussed, and I don't know that secondary specialists, I think Paul is talking about, you want to just spend a minute about what that was about, Paul?
Well, we've traditionally had specialists in content areas for secondary. A teacher specialist for math, a teacher specialist for science, language arts, and so on. We've not always had one for each, but that's kind of an important part of a curriculum department to have a specialist. The high school principal, myself even as the curriculum director over secondary, I'm not going to be adept at all of the content in the secondary to the level of which an expert teacher would be. And so the model typically uses, even in small and large districts, where they have teacher specialists that help lead in those areas. The reason it's down on the bottom part is we use people that way anyway. We have Carrie Baller that kind of leads things at the high school. We have her go to some middle school trainings and meetings to help. One day, those need to be added. With the digital conversion on the table and other things on the table, I've already indicated that, you know, we'll make it work for another year or two.
Okay. He's not recommending that this be on the table right now, but we want you to see this. So these things that are down here on this other list, I want to talk a little bit about. They're important conversations, not necessarily for this next year, possibly, unless you want to put them up there. But you need to hear what I'm hearing from our experts here about these issues. So Eric, talk about K-3 reading specialists.
Keith kind of talked about this earlier, that the districts have an opportunity to do a levy for K-3 reading. That's something we haven't done. Talked with the principals, that is still a need. We're having more and more kids, and it's on that other list because I'm not recommending we go that route now for multiple reasons. One, not to raise the levy. It is a need that increasingly, as you look, and I can bring this at a later date for us if need be. You can look at our kindergarten numbers of just the first test that they take. The kids that are coming into our elementary schools are much more deficient in their abilities than what we've traditionally had, and you can kind of see that trend happening. So there's more and more concern about getting those kids up to level by third grade, just by nature of the kids that are coming into our schools. So that was that. The Title II I've already talked about. That
Eric,
was really,
can I ask on that, though? We do have reading specialists at each elementary, do we not?
They are interventionists, so they're working on intervention across, that's right. And so they're only able to meet the needs of so many kids, and because
they're
that
not
need
coaching
is
gr- teachers, they're working
that,
with kids.
Because that need has grown so much,
okay,
they're not able to handle the load that they have to remediate students. And what's been sacrificed, again, is that coaching teachers on that initial instruction on how to do that better. They're so busy trying to plug in the holes, so to speak, with working with kids going, okay, I need to teach this teacher how to do better, but this kid needs help today now. It's just created that increased load. So the other one is the Title II, again, that instructional codes with improving teaching and learning relates to the previous conversation I had. And our recommendation was not to do that so we could combine different funds. Part of Title II and part of this need with BYU and trying to put multiple hats on one individual to make that, again, to reduce the finances and the resources that we're applying to those needs if we look at them in isolation.
Okay. We've already made decisions about the school psychologist because we hired Dr. Ben Springer. Okay. And nothing but good receptions that I'm hearing all over the place relative to that decision. So that one you can just cross off right now because he is a school psychologist, okay? That's what his PhD is in. But he's also taking all those other, I won't say all the other things, he's taking the special ed part, and
some other things that Jane was doing, but not all the things that she was working on.
Have that in the back of your mind, because it may resurface.
It may resurface, according.
Yeah.
Really?
Or a year.
Okay. The last one here.
Okay, let's not have. If we're going to.
Are you done?
We asked.
Okay, all right. What he's telling us all is that the school psychologists, the need for them is likely to grow.
To be a full time position.
And we would like to develop some relationships with some universities to help us build a pool of people down the road that we can actually have come to our school district to do certain things. Okay, the last one on this list was the North Campus administrative changes. Blake and I attended a meeting with the administrator, Adam Hagen, and where he outlined a proposal about what he's feeling is, so much of my time as administrative, I'm not spending nearly the same amount of time as I wanted to or thought I would be doing the teaching part of my contract. And so he's suggesting that we increase the amount of that one of our adult education teachers go to full time, and that we provide benefits for that. And that he go to, because he's spending a lot of time doing the administrative work for that, and that we also increase his, move him from a half-time administrator to a full-time administrator in that role. We're not recommending that at this time. We've estimated the cost there. You know, the thing about the high school, as it grows and that program grows, that disparity in those issues are likely to become more a problem for us.
Is
we're going to have to look at
more
that.
Kids than Claire was last year? Or the numbers?
If you look at this, this is what he showed us, the kind of what's happened. So here we are back to 2001, and here we are in this current year. So he's suggesting that right now they're serving over 120 kids.
Right, and this time of year show is done.
And that's the way it is. So this was kind of, that's his justification for how things are changing. In fact, the high school's growing a lot too. So during that same time, the high school's growing. I'm just saying to you that this is likely to become more an issue more and more. Or we get better at reducing these problems up front. Frankly, I'd like to see this actually go the other direction. This is not the direction
that
I'd like to
see
this go.
Yeah, and the thing that I think there is a lot of good collaboration going on between both campuses.
And the high school.
There really
right.
is,
sure.
more than I think
so.
There ever has been. But what I'm concerned with is, as we saw that last video clip of your presentation, the kids that drop out and where they end up, that's where I can see an emphasis for this, because we want to try to capture every student and not let even one's too many in my mind. And so that's where I really can see a need for this particular situation. Not that I want that to keep going up, we don't. And I think we are doing a good job of collaborating both campuses, but I don't want to see any.
The high school principal is not recommending that we make a change here, and I think that's important. Okay, Paul, you want to add to that? I think that's...
No, I feel the same way. I think, you know, we should all like to take a closer look at some of those numbers and students. But we are talking about the same job that Claire did for a number of years
on
this same salary schedule. So
if
we're going to put more money into it, we might want to put more money into it in additional personnel, not by making it a full-time administrative job.
Right.
That would be my recommendation. If we can't handle getting an extra teacher in there, but if it's the same numbers that we've had before, it might just be a flex of who's over there now and they're not used to the load that she's been carrying. So.
And the other thing is we have other things that are flexing, like technologies that we're using at the high school that help, that we are paying, that this district is paying for,
that is supposedly helping to help reduce this too.
Right.
And then we also have the online schools that we started.
That
creates flexibility too. So all of those things have to be considered together as part of the overall solution for this. So, Blake, are you okay with kind of where we're thinking? Okay. So there you go. That's the sum total of the different things that we talked about as an administrative staff with Keith and the costs associated with those things. I think there are some things that we should just decide are givens, like, for example, the additional FTE at the high school. I don't know how we could ever justify not doing the additional FTE that the high school needs.
So are you giving your priority list now?
That was not even on as a priority list.
Wait, can I ask?
That's a given.
It's
on the list.
It's on later to discuss, but we haven't, it's not on a list, so maybe it should can't be up for discussion, is the improving music program. We all received the recommendation from Chris.
Okay. All right.
To me, that's a more important of a position than having a certified person in the library.
All right. There are two other things that I haven't talked about. I haven't talked about the resource officer in that. Thank you, Katie. Okay, we'll get to the music one in just a minute.
Okay.
The reason I wanted to talk about the four, where is it here?
Which one?
About five from the top list, bottom one.
Yeah, the teachers, the four FTE.
It's 345,000.
Third from the bottom after the break.
Fourth from the bottom of the break.
Okay. Yeah, there it is. All right. In my mind, unless you're really saying you want to increase class size at the high school anymore, that seems to be one that's a given. We could never say to the legislature, you funded growth fully, but we didn't add any teachers. Okay? So,
well, I think it goes beyond that. It's a fundamental responsibility. We have the kids, 42 kids in a math class. We can bring it to 38. We need to bring it to 38. Yeah. It's past the point.
So that's why I'm saying what I'm saying. All right, is there?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Okay. And I think the school counselor is in that same boat too, unless others feel differently. Okay, then let's get back to these other items, starting first with the resource officer. I don't know how many of you have met Dave Booth, the police chief. Who's met him here? Okay? He is a delightful young man. I am just very thrilled with what he's done in so many respects with the city police department. And how he's built a relationship with the county sheriff's department that, frankly, in all the years I've been here, I wouldn't say the relationship between the two entities has always been working very, very well. Sometimes there's been friction, and that's not abnormal. But what I see Chief Booth doing is really enhancing the relationship, turning it from where it had been okay or good to something extremely positive. He came to me and said, you know, I've been thinking we would love to have a resource officer in the schools. And I said, well, I'd love to have a resource officer in the schools too, another one. Who's paying for it? So that was the conversation kind of went along those lines. What would they do? Well, they would do very similar things as to what our resource officer does at the high school. You know, works with kids, is a presence, deals with the law enforcement issues that might be there, helps with all the kinds of things that we know the resource officers do. When we got to the part about who's paying for it, I tried to get him to understand how we started in this process with the sheriff's department. We, for a long, long, I don't know how many years, Keith, quite a long time. 10 to 12 years, we contributed about $18,000 until most of you were on the board a couple years ago.
This was the first year.
This year, where we jumped that to 52,000. I said, I told them flat out, I don't think, though the board could feel good about having other resource officers in our schools, I don't know. I suspect that there might be some problems having us pay for another resource officer. I tried to get him to see that. I tried to get him to see that the way it worked before was the funding source actually came from a grant or the sheriff's department themselves moving things as far as they could, and then we picked up the rest. I said maybe the board would consider something partial, considerate, or anything. Well, he came to me yesterday and he told me that the city cannot do anything along those lines. Either we pay for all of it, or he doesn't think it can happen. I want you to know, here's how I feel about this. In light of all the things that have gone on this year alone, whatever additional resources to help protect kids needs to be considered. Keeping the relationship as strong as it is that we have right now, I mean, I cannot tell you how the positive things I've heard repeatedly over and over and over again about the law enforcement personnel coming into our schools every day and what that's meant in terms of providing security and comfort to our educators and people in all of our buildings is way important. Now, I'm not saying I'm telling you that I think we should fund this position. I'm saying we need to consider all the things over time, I'm not sure exactly what all those additional security measures might need to be, but we certainly need to be vigilant in trying to do everything we can to prevent tragedy in our own school district. So, Mr. Judd, any comment about that? Then we'll go to Shad's question. Okay.
Help me understand. The current resource officer is through the county.
Yes.
And clearly, Heber City believes that we're servicing the county because of impact fees. So my question is, why would we want a resource officer from Heber City instead of a second resource officer with the county if we're moving in that direction?
Great, great question. Because the sheriff also is in favor of Heber City. What actually has happened is the Sheriff's Department has made an arrangement with Heber City that if there's an incident at a school in Heber City boundaries, likely the first responders are going to be Heber City police officers.
Our schools in Heber City would be?
All the schools in city boundaries would
everything
be.
Everything except Wellsdale and Midway.
And old,
everything else.
Okay. The count, obviously, the sheriff is full time. Officer Purdy is full time at the high school.
At the high school.
Okay. They also have their officer that they fund too. That works with our elementary schools. So it's not as if the sheriff's pawning everything off to them. They're just saying if there's incidents at those elementary schools, which most of them are, they're not all elementary schools. If there are incidents that. Dispatch may or likely will dispatch a Heber City police officer. So what I see happening is the Sheriff's Department for the first time, Chad, and Heber City for the first time really doing more of this and not separating as been in the past. So it's kind of a new paradigm, and I understand why you're asking the question.
And you hope that continues.
Right. Exactly. I mean, the point's well taken. You know,
I wish the city would feel the same urgency and passion that you do with helping protect the children of this community. And we all have to make tough decisions in our budgets. The city has to. We have to. The county has to. And I just wish they would have that same desire to want to protect our students and figure a way to help participate.
Our role is to educate kids. It seems like theirs
is to protect
citizens.
Yeah. But I hear what you're saying, Blake, and I agree with you.
Would there be an option to go? I know I've spoken with Chief Booth. and he has a whole program and a whole way to look at things and a whole way to deal with things. And what was articulated to me was the number of incidents in, like, blows my mind, the 10 and 11 and 12 year old kids, and the level of severity of the crimes. They caught the two kids that broke the window at the high school the other day when we were there.
They caught them?
11 years old.
When we were there just the other day?
Yep.
Yep.
11 years old. Yep. And they're saying, how do you prosecute an 11-year-old kid this level of crimes? And the state tells him, take him right to the state facilities and stuff. And he's like, these are 11-year-old kids that live here, and they're dealing with all the crime in the city limits, which is where all the kids are committing all the crimes. You know, so he's got a passionate plea that he wants to help and wants to do it and partner up. I, like you, would like to see, let's split the $40,000. Let's go to Heber City and say, you know what, we want a program to help benefit
the kids.
That's
what I tried to explore.
Part of his program is being able to work some deals with these kids instead of giving them records right off the bat, which benefits the kids, to teach the kids better behavior.
Right.
Because it's like us with our, I liken it, as he was talking to me, is, you know, we'd love to do the drug policy, but I don't want to be the one putting that drug record at 16 years old on that kid because he tried pot once, which I don't think they should try it. But, and then when he's 23 years old, he can't get in a career, or he can't go on a mission, or he can't do whatever he can't do because he was an idiot once, you know. The ones that repeat, they're going to process. They're going to press charges on. But the ones that they're trying to teach, it gives the police a force more opportunity, I guess I want to say, to help teach the kids and know them better. I don't know. That is his thing.
That is his thing. And I didn't bring that up here, but you're exactly right, Ann. And I'm, you know, you wanted to come up. I said no. Okay. I felt like we had enough on our plate right now. But I need to tell you, the issues that he's talking about are important. And I wish we could develop a relationship. I would like to continue to work on it as best we can.
Is it an all or nothing?
That's what I explored. It's an all or nothing.
Have we gathered any data from other districts on how they do this? Is there any type of model around the state? Are other districts paying for all of their law enforcement? Or are the law enforcement agencies kicking in?
We do know that some school districts hire their own people, but they're very large school districts like Granite. Most of them have a relationship with the county or city in which they reside. In Provo, where I was at, the relationship was with Provo City.
My question is, who's paying for it?
There was a shared relationship in Provo's case.
Because
but a lot of times it was federal
grants.
Yeah.
I mean, they're hired by the public. We pay our taxes to protect our kids.
In Granite's case, like Granite's paying for it.
Well, and during the day, I'm thinking...
our staff is protecting them.
Well, I love the fact that they're a bigger presence in the building.
Mm-hmm.
It's been noticed and it's been felt, and I think it's better. I don't understand why that can't continue. The issues that Chief Booth is talking about are the after-hours issues. He tells officers during the day that can be in the building making a presence.
But we want the kids in class being taught educational things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Does that help?
How many deputies are there in Wasatch County?
I don't know. A lot.
I
don't know what that number is. Okay. Any other questions about that one? I'd like to turn to Eric and Paul to talk about the music specialist proposal that you received. Okay, and I think we put it in. Did we put information in here or not? Okay, but you had all received that.
We all received it.
Yeah, go ahead, you guys. Let's start with you. One of you guys.
But I'll begin the conversation and then Eric talks specifically about elementary. Is that what that's right? There's been several music issues going on for a year or two in the district, several discussions, I should say, and I think they're just converging this year, and it's kind of brought it to a head. Mike Sigurd, the high school band teacher, has a health condition. It's really hard for him to be, especially out in the cold at a football game and
also even his extracurricular duties inside. It's become a real burden on him health-wise. At the same time, we have a really competent band instructor in the middle levels, Chris Balla, who comes from his high school experience was from a really tremendous music school in the Chicago area, including a marching band, and he has a vision for all that and has expressed interest over the years in someday moving up into the high school. So as we're having that discussion, the other discussion that has merged in with that overall discussion is, for a long time, the music professional learning community, we have a professional learning community of musicians in our district that meet monthly. And the proposal that you got in your email is at least a year old, and maybe two. We've seen it before, we've looked at it, we've considered it. So it has come into play as we've talked about, okay, what do we do? So we've had a couple of collaborative meetings with administrators from TIS on up, and Eric's been involved in those meetings. What do we do if we do move Mike Sigger down and Chris Balla up? How do we go about doing this? And the conversation has led to, well, what about this proposal from our music people about elementary music? And should that be part of the mix? The proposal that you got a copy of, it's well researched, and it has some pretty important points that are made as far as teaching music. We know, I think it's common knowledge that students that are learning music as well as students that are learning a second language do very well in their other academic areas. Chris provided some research that he had tied to a source that said before the age of 9 is the right time to get this started, to create those pathways in the brain that lead to music and the other things. And so, with all of those things coming together, we've had that discussion as to maybe a good fit for Mike Sigurd would be to continue his halftime at TIS, use his other halftime to make that step of a certified music person in the elementary schools, move Chris Balla to the high school. That would entail us hiring probably at least a halftime teacher to do the music at the junior high. And why don't you talk about your elementary and kind of how that thing's going?
Right. I mean, just to echo what Paul said, the elementary principals have been talking about ways to find certified music in the elementary schools for a long time. I mean, it's been a passion of theirs, and again, it's been resources. How do you talk about those in years where you're cutting back, and you guys have brought up some of those issues. So as this has been happening with TIS on up, one of the issues at Timpanogos in particular is that Deanna has to judge what classes kids go into by the music class that they choose, which is upside down. So part of this changes will help us to make it
open that up where we can put
kids in with the right teacher that they need, and then they can choose whatever elective that they need. A couple things that we were going to try, and as superintendent said earlier, that Beverly Taylor Sorensen grant, though we don't know how much, we will receive, what I understand is what we used to get is going to be restored, and that there's even additional money there, and four more grants. So this year, and it's due next week, working with Joanne Mehmet and her working with the people from BYU that work with the Beverly Taylor Sorensen grant, they say that our district is in a prime position to receive grants because of the nature of our size and being able to hit every elementary school. That is going to be a boon because they can't do that at this point in any other elementary school or any other district. So we are going to be applying for another grant, which would be a full-time certified music person for Old Mill, and for Heber Valley. They would be doing a very similar program to what Joanne is doing with ART and J.R. Smith at Midway, if you're familiar with how she does that. That is not a prep time issue. It is a side-by-side issue where the classroom teacher comes in with that certified ART, in this case music teacher for this new grad, and work together with the kids. Having said that, with that, they're encouraging us to write another grant for TIS in art because they don't have a visual arts program up there at this time. With the number of kids she has at school, we would qualify for a three-quarter salary coming from with their numbers, from the Beverly Tillis and Sorensen grant. So, anyway, that's kind of where we're at as far as plans. That is due May 1st. We'll have both those grants in, and we'll see what happens. Having said that, with the issue of the instrumental with Mike Seeger, I've talked to all the elementary principals. There are two principals that are way interested in having that instrumental music come, J.R. Smith and Midway, because they, you know, they've already been having the certified art. Since Old Mill and Heber Valley are just going to start with a certified music person, they are not as interested in doing that during the day, though interested in maybe some after school, if that was possible. Anyway, so that's been the conversation and how we're trying to move forward and take care of some of those needs and desires.
Love it.
Questions, Debbie, did that?
Perfect. I'm okay. So glad to help you make that happen. Awesome. All of the above. Thanks.
Now, just because we might be in a prime position for those grants doesn't necessarily mean we get them. I thought we were in prime position for additional this year, and we didn't get it.
Whether we get grants or not, we can still make the shift in
we're talking about personnel shifts right
anyway.
Now. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Now, with that in mind, it's 2:00. I knew we had a lot more on this agenda than we ever could do in the time frame we had. But Blake asked what our priority list is. It's now the time to give that list. Are you okay with that, board members? Okay. Okay. We've already talked about dual immersion. That's a done deal. We've already talked about the high school FTE and counselors. That's a done deal. Those things are we've already talked about. So list then taking those off. You know, those are done. The number one piece on our list is this digital conversion piece, which are these items here on the personnel side of the conversation. The technology side of the conversation is something that we can handle better from the capital side, and you saw we have improvement in the budget on the capital side. It's my feeling that we should use capital funds that moves forward in this project. Now, part of that could also be how we can use, we might be able to use some capital funds to help with the personnel side of this conversation too, particularly if we contract with other people and other vendors associated with this who might help us with those things. So, Paul, you want to add any of that conversation?
It's certainly an option. It's a little bit tricky. What it would look like is there are districts out there that when they buy digital curriculum, included in that price is one of these integrationists to come into your school and be that trainer that's embedded into your school. That means someone either has to relocate to our valley. There may be some people that live here. I don't know of any. The other model that would be helpful is if that's included in our contract with Pearson or
somebody, that.
Whoever we go with, and we hire our own person.
I was going to say, can we line item them out and substitute our own staff?
And I think, you know, we haven't had this conversation in depth, but that could possibly work where they just provide the money back to us and they're still paid through our district. What I don't think would work is for them to be on on a third party's payroll because that would take them out of their retirement system and all.
Right, that
stuff.
Won't work.
Yeah.
But if it wasn't, if it was an item, if it was an item on the bid, and it is a check written to a third party provider, Keith's feeling is that it could come from the capital side.
Does that make sense to you?
It just should be something we ask.
So if that happens, does that 140 go over to capital? 140.
Some of it could.
If we did it that way.
If we do it that way, the 140 can come.
The 40 for the IT tech, could that too?
No.
No.
That's not associated with a digital conversion at all.
Well,
it helps some, but...
Well, anyway,
Carl would be asking for that regardless. Yeah,
okay.
That's your point.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. But it'll help.
Does that help you understand our thinking about
like
this?
That.
And then
there is some flexibility.
We're trying to say is we feel like there's some flexibility rather than be daunted by all these additional FTE costs, particularly around the digital thing. We see some ways to flex those budgets and the intent of those things under the law that we can do these things.
Yeah, do it for
okay?
sure.
So,
if it's really a priority for us, and that's where we end as a group of six, if this is our priority, the statement that was made by the superintendent in Huntsville when we were visiting, he took over, it was his second year as superintendent. He had taken over a school district that was in the red. In 2 years' time, he'd made them financially solvent, and they'd done a K-12 digital curriculum rollout for 25,000 students. And he said, I get asked all the time, how in the world do you do this? Did you do this? And he says, his response is, look, this cost us around 5% of the budget to do the digital curriculum conversion. He said, if I can't rearrange my budget and come up with a 5% shift to something that's really important to me, then, you know, what's wrong with me? And that was his response. And I think in that vein, the six of us had a really good conversation on what are some other things that maybe we haven't even brought up today that we'd be willing to put on the table to make this work if we have to. Mm-hmm. Because it's that important to us.
And that's how we like to do things here. We need, that's why you saw this whole thing done the way it was done here.
Well, and
Keith,
just something that came up in that meeting, this digital conversion was, I mean, it was basically number one on our list because the dual immersion specialist had already been done, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the reason, it's inevitable. This just gets us, like we were out in front on the PLCs. This puts us out in front again on the digital conversion.
Yeah.
It's going to be forced on us.
Yeah, it's been what we've been studying at every convention we've been to, and we've been saying, how can we do it? How can we do it?
So we've been working on that. We know you've been studying.
Yeah, we're committed to it.
Along with that, going back to Mark's question and getting the information out to parents, and you know, do we see that as a PR, or do we see that as a whole different area that needs to be a piece and part of this discussion as we move forward to make sure that it's implemented appropriately in the community with the parents? I just want to throw that question out.
Yeah, it's a great question.
For discussion.
Now?
Yeah. Anybody have any input or any thoughts on that? I know that can't be done through capital.
No.
To me, and I know I'm new, but to me,
you're 60 days into it.
To me, it seems like a great time to educate the whole realm of it, rather than just pick out one piece. It doesn't make sense to me to not have that support there for the parents or the information there for the parents, and have them frustrated maybe in being able to find it. I think the thing that I'm learning is that the parents are so busy that they need it pushed on them rather than them going and finding it. And so if we can provide it for them, and I think it's a great way to boost the community perception not saying that it's negative, but to put us out in front and have people talking about it, I think it just goes hand in hand with what we're doing right now. I don't know if we have all of the money for it right now, but I think that the impact that it could have at the same time would be more.
Okay.
I guess I need to ask a question to Paul. As you visited these two districts, one, did they have a PR specialist? And two, how integral was Facebook, Pinterest, Twitter to the digital curriculum? Or were parents communicated through email? Because the one video we saw was texting
back
and forth.
District website, it looked like.
We didn't hear a lot about how they did their public relations. I don't remember them talking about a PR specialist, but I couldn't say that they didn't have one. Do you remember anything being said along those lines?
No, not along those lines.
But it wasn't like you've got to have this as part of.
It wasn't a major component of any of their presentations or anything.
Just important to communicate.
Yeah, just the fact that it was important. They didn't say, yeah, we have this, but I certainly wouldn't say that they didn't either. I don't know.
But if it would have been an integral part of it, they would have brought it up. I would think so too.
I would imagine, because they knew that you were there to see how you got. Yeah. They got successful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So I guess I'm saying, I think it's related, but I don't know that it's a package deal.
Sure, and that's why I brought the question up.
Well, one of the things that I've just learned about PR, in my experience, PR doesn't mean a thing if your kid isn't having a good experience in the classroom.
Yeah, that's really
doesn't matter what article or what that tweet says or what that blog says. If your kid's coming home and not having an idea of what to do with that digital piece, it doesn't matter how great that article is in the Wave or whatever PR has been done there. Most parents' experience with what they feel the school is directly related to the kid's relationship with the teacher. In all the years that I was a principal when AYP was out, the years I failed AYP, not a single phone call. The years I passed AYP, not a single phone call. They don't care.
I don't think they had your phone number.
As long as their kids are happy and they're feeling validated by their teacher and their teacher's okay, they're fine.
Well, and I don't want to discount a PR specialist because I do think that's an important thing to have. With the better focus in my mind, you want to sell parents on a digital conversion. It's the excited kid who comes home with their device that just is extending their learning day because here's this project that I'm doing.
Let me show you, Mom.
And there's no doubt we've got to get better at using social media.
Well, don't get us wrong. We would love to have a full-time PR specialist help with this rollout. We're just looking at the list like you are, and you know, we're with Keith's numbers and 18%, I mean, we're feeling guilty about asking for anything. And so, you know, I think ultimately that has to come back to you guys. But it'd be awesome. We'd love to have a PR specialist. Is this the year to do it? I don't know. If we can pull it off, then...
Okay, so my question is, we kind of already have a PR specialist that we are paying. I don't know for how many hours we are paying John to do PR stuff above and beyond his teacher. Someone said $1,200 a month. I don't know if that's really what hours that equates to.
It's 2 hours a day.
Okay. So
is what we pay.
With those 2 hours a day, could we switch our focus rather than if the four articles we're getting a month for the newspaper,
could we switch our focus to
Facebook and
I agree with Mark there. The world is no longer...
They're not looking at the
Wave. A passive website does not get looked at.
No.
If it's not a push notification, people aren't doing it. And they're gearing their technology to get whatever they want pushed to them.
Mm-hmm. And at 2 hours a day, what the girls are getting out of what they came and presented to us, your two teachers, I would think 2 hours a day, John would be able to manage the Facebook, Twitter,
and that stuff to get some of this information
and do a
coordinate.
PR push
coordinating with the schools what they do and get those pushes and those tweets. I'm for entry for what we can do now with what we have. Or if you can't, then I hate to say we'll give.
Well, the question I wanted answered for me, and I think it has been, is that an integral part of this conversion? And I'm hearing that really it's not. I think.
But it's not integral to the conversion portion, but I think it's integral to our communication.
Well, I don't think
Mark,
it changes the way we feel
way
as
we
far
feel
as
is,
we want to push
yeah.
those other social medias.
Yeah.
It really, though, to me, isn't necessarily. It would be a part of this piece, but it's not an integral part.
The social media part on the district
webpage. It's not a deal breaker.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think the conversation that we need to have with Facebook and those type of things
is our expectation of what we have.
We need to have that, and maybe we do some adjustment with John as far as what he focuses on. We'll have to have that conversation with John and see what he suggests.
Go ahead, Mark.
I'm talking about two things and making them one, but we talk about telling our story and getting this out and getting information out to our community. If maybe Facebook and Twitter are getting overemphasized right now because there's probably a lot of our parents who aren't on Twitter yet, but as far as media like, we are going to a digital conversion. Here's a video we put together on that, emailed out to parents. We are, like the award that Keith got as a business administrator, the award that Doug Hardy's getting. Yeah, stuff like that. Pushing that on it just raises the whole perception of the district and for those who don't look. I mean, if that's not in front of them, they're not going to find it. And so I guess what I'm saying is having that PR person kind of push that stuff on to it, not just social media, mm-hmm. but be able to tell our story. I think that comes up in every meeting that we go to. And maybe this isn't the time to discuss that, but I think there's a difference in those two.
There is. And what I was going to say, I think we need to be bringing back to the board ways in which we think we can do this well. We haven't done that. Yeah. We haven't done that.
No, yet. And I think the board has asked for months.
Yeah.
What does John do for two hours a day?
Yeah.
Show us what he's doing that we're paying him for, that's so that we can understand this is what he's doing, so now we need to bring in this much more. How
do
much more is it going
to
take?
We need to restructure what
because
we're already doing.
What we're saying, and we've said for 3 or 4 months now, is what is he doing with his 2 hours a day? I mean, I'm sorry, I'm being
you're fine, Ann.
But that's a question I think I need to know before I look at how much more do we need to pay, because I need to know how much it's going to take. Like I said, we saw a dynamo presentation by a couple girls that are tweeting and Twitter and Facebook and working their digital media all day, every day, so what does it take to get something up and going that pushes out, like what Mark's saying? That can articulate these things. Is it going to take 4 hours a day, or is it going to take a full-time person? Show us the structure of what's being done. What are we getting for our money, so that we can gauge how much more we need to bump it up to what the board's expectations seem to be. Does that sound fair?
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. The board is seeing something that he's proposed,
but we didn't ask that day.
We didn't ask that day.
No, we didn't, but we
That's
have
your point,
asked
and I'm
several times.
I'm here.
Okay.
So we're gonna have to have a conversation. I think we need to look at it. Maybe we're focusing in on that idea and not paying attention to what you're talking about here, Ann, enough or at all.
Well, the difference
and,
in what
and there's
the
a
two.
There's a major difference there. Okay. Other comments about
Okay.
Number one was your digital.
Right. And on the list, as the next one was the CFA
position.
That one there, which is combined with other funds, as Eric talked about, to create a full-time position. So
So the new money part is just the $35,000.
The next item was the transportation secretary. And then underneath that was the tech secretary, but I'm saying, I mean, not the tech secretary, the tech IT. Technician, the IT. My feeling is the 40% for that piece has to also fit in the digital conversion piece.
So those two are tied. They're tied
together.
Mm-hmm. So I would just tie those together.
Okay, so.
So CFA, transportation secretary, the next two.
Is digital conversion $140,000? Staffing, or are we thinking to have it come out of capital?
Yes and yes. We got to flex that to see how that goes.
Okay. Same with IT tech. Could be staffing, could be.
IT tech will come out of capital because most of his does.
Responsibility is capital.
Carl and his staffers for capital.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, with a grin.
Now, and this goes back to last year's conversation. Remember, we talked about the 10% of basic levy bringing it into M&O. So it is in M&O with those same funds that used to be capital. Now they're M&O. That's how we got from the deficit that we had last year to a surplus this year. As we moved that levy into M&O with its expenses, associated expenses.
We're keeping it in the basic over into
M&O.
That's a damn deal.
Okay. So answer Shad's question then. Is it capital or 10%?
Capital.
Okay.
Both of them.
Well.
Both of them what?
The digital conversion.
Digital specialist and the IT.
Well,
we're saying.
Could be.
It's flexible.
We're saying this could be. We have to explore the options.
Okay, but for sure the $40,000.
Yes.
Okay.
And are any of our media in the elementary school person that we've chosen to be the integrationist?
You're saying could we?
Yeah.
Change their assignment.
Retool those assignments. Yes, that's something we're being considered. I mean, we're looking at the expenses of this. We're trying to look at what we currently have. And
see how we can train differently, change their assignment, have new, for example, our computer technicians, our computer teachers at the elementary schools. Mm-hmm. When we
do this, are we going to need them?
That's the point.
I'm looking at a Shirley Sulzer. A Shirley Sulzer that's a fabulous teacher that would be a great... CFA person.
Right. Yeah. If we did go down that route, it could be the potential for an employer to not be qualified for the job that we need. That's what you're asking, right?
Yeah. And then do you get to a point where you just have one certified media specialist that oversees all elementary schools?
Why not?
Check out books and shelf.
The point of making them certified at the elementary level was kind of twofold. It got teachers, they could count it as teaching time, they left it with another certified teacher and gave them prep time. So the teachers could run back to the classroom for 20 minutes or half an hour and do it. And the level of services that they were to provide was supposed to go up. I think that the level of services they provide could still stay high without that certification.
I don't know that the level of checking out services can stay high, not the level of literacy education. What I've said to Eric is these library media teachers should be, and can be very quality literacy teachers, particularly in the area of reading and writing. And we should be using them that way. And I'm talking
about. Do we have any reason to believe where they're not?
My point is, if we pull them out,
they're just doing checking out books.
Movement, all they're doing is checking out books, and we've lost another literacy teacher in the school.
But are we going to the? I'm hearing that we're going to the technology, and they're going to be opening this and reading Little Women. Is our shift going to be shifting from what we even knew were like the libraries adding this technology?
Again, we're talking about positions at the elementary schools. And there's a couple issues. Number one is that's the last group
that's going to get it. So that's the last group to be tooled. So even though it's on the table now, that's not a group that's even going to be considered
3 years
out. The other issue is the reason why we're doing not one-to-one in the K-2 is because there's obviously, we want kids doing everything digitally in those grades of pre-K through second grade. Absolutely not. The reason why it is 1 to 3 is because when we can leverage technology to help groups of students, like in a center as you see them, then that's when that needs to be done. There are some literacy skills that it's going to behoove us to have an individual there teaching and not using technology. And so there's a lot of those issues that need to be worked out. Do their jobs change? Does a kid need to be looking at a Dewey Decimal System like they used to before? I'm having a hard time arguing that one.
Could you come home with me and explain my mom about cursive writing? Yeah.
But if a kid wants to read a book and they're in K-2, that device is sitting in their room because it's 1 to 3. Not everyone have one and walk and read Little Women. Yeah. And then if we have some that are reading Little Women in second grade, it might behoove us to have that kid walk around with the device more often.
Yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah.
But those are some of the issues involved with the elementary where we need to make sure it's age appropriate.
It's different. Yeah.
And so will we be retooling those two positions? And not to be heretical, because if that's set up right now, I'll be screaming from the nearest and every light bulb in the district. But we need to look at that strategically and wisely and say, what is the best with our curriculum for kids at certain ages and their progression?
And what do we give up in the change?
That's right.
Yeah. We don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
And why did you decide to do elementary as the last?
Mainly because we already started in fifth grade. Yeah, and with devices. I mean, that was a decision that was made. They're already going up. So we need to catch up with those teachers because those kids are coming no matter what with those skills and expectations. So that's mainly the reason.
And the other districts aren't starting with kindergarten necessarily. They're saying those aren't necessarily all one-to-one devices either, where we started with one-to-one in the middle level because that's where we felt like we could actually have the greatest impact and build it over time.
I just know that we've received some training at these different conferences, and the schools that are using it, you can share the story you shared with me today, are making significant gains. And I think the earlier on that you start making those gains, the better. And so I just wondered why we weren't taking that original fifth grade, is that who got the, and making sure by the time they got to high school, we had devices for them.
And that's
but
what
starting,
that's
that
why they're
is,
going
that is what
first.
We're doing.
Because if we don't go that way, we won't catch up with them. If we go with elementary, we won't catch those kids by the time they hit the high school.
They're in seventh grade. They're in seventh this year, and eighth next year, and high school.
So that would be year three.
They're in fifth and sixth now. Those kids.
TIS, all the kids at TIS have one-to-one devices.
Right.
And so
the next year is planned to go to seventh grade.
Going to seventh grade. Start the middle school tall.
And so we're jumping 2 years.
So what I'm saying is. They're going into TIS, so we're actually 3 years out before they would need the devices in high school. That was my thinking. Do you understand that?
Yes.
So what you're saying is you're going to have to, in 3 years, buy devices for the kids in high school and
as
the
well
fifth graders
right,
and the
grade
schools. So we have 3 years of buying devices that year.
I will tell you that when we proposed the 3 years, Carl was the first one to say, let's do elementary on year two as well. We don't need 3 years. Let's do it in two.
I'm the one that asked them to add another year.
And so he thinks, especially where it's 1 to 3 with those early grades and with tablets, he thinks that with his current budget and kind of pushing and pulling and replacing some things, he's in favor of doing the whole thing in 2 years.
And your caution is? Too much too fast, or?
Well, we have a lot of things on the capital list. A lot of things on the list.
Yeah, we
when we did those capital projects, this wasn't even part of that.
We haven't seen numbers on
so
what this will cost.
This either pushes back some of those things or totally replaces some of those things. Because we're talking about the same amount of money.
That's the thing. We haven't heard any dollar amount.
Well, but how much
is the K for? Is the K through 4 the least expensive part of that? Because it's 1 to 3, or is it?
There's more kids.
The more expensive part.
Four grades.
You know, I don't think we've really ran the hard numbers on it. I just know from the device standpoint, and you know, we thought it is possibly doable, especially if we start spending, if we build it into the budget to spend a certain amount ongoing from here. I don't know. We think it's probably good. You want to speak to that?
If all the kids are getting devices in fifth grade, it would be the same almost as buying almost a device for every kid in. If the four schools, that would be a 1 to 4 model. It would be about the same price as we're getting.
Was what we were doing. That's
for the, and a little bit more. So it's not a whole lot more that grade and then looking at the high school.
And you know, it might be we do the 7-8 next year and we study it, we see what it costs us, and then
that's
we make a decision in a year.
But we already have the 7th, 8th. They'll already have their...
Not the 8th.
Not the 8th. I thought when we bought it,
next year you'll
four
be buying
grades
for 5 and 8.
No, next year it goes naturally to 7.
We're saying 7 and 8, but you're actually replacing the 5th grade. So next
you're
year...
You're
going to
buy for fifth grade, you're
going to
buy for
8
next year if you approve this, if you feel okay about this plan. You're doubling, you're buying 400-something for the 5th graders and 400-something for the 8th graders. You're buying 1,000 devices.
So the my 8th graders next year were the ones that already have a device bought.
No,
7th
graders next year.
I meant.
It's only up to 7.
Yeah.
It's
only
up
there
to
7. There's 6th grade today.
Right.
They're going to
7th
grade
next
year. Then the year after. So next year.
So then the next year, the second year in, they would have them. That's why we were saying at that point, the 8th graders would be going into 9th grade, and then we just have to buy 10, 11, 12. So 8. 8-5. That makes sense.
Two other issues with elementary is many of your teachers and principals, and one at first was like, oh no, we can't handle this at the elementary, our teachers aren't for it. She went back to her leadership team and they said, what did you just say? We want it today, not 3 years from now. So there's a lot in the elementary that would take it. If we can afford it, they would jump on it. The other thing is, though, all your elementaries are engaged in that CMI professional development. So we talk about integrationist and learning too much. We talk about those that their world is going to be rocked. In some respects, that's a lot putting on their plate at once, which is another reason maybe to, is with most of them, I think, jump on it and do both at the same time. Absolutely, because they are related. It isn't one more thing. It's a different way of doing business with everything, and it will, like we've already talked about, will make it even easier and their teaching more powerful, and we'll see those results that you guys have seen across those districts. So
will we still be using Treasures if when we go to digital learning?
Treasures has some,
has some digital
technological
components
and digital components to it. Now when we looked at Treasures, that is not, we didn't look at it with that big of a lens for technology, so to speak. So might there be other better programs out there? Maybe. But there are components to it, so we wouldn't have to skip a beat.
So you'll look at that.
Absolutely.
And then the reason we wanted to do the secondary is the way we're doing it is because, as Stephanie said, even at the middle school, all of her teachers teach both 7th and 8th grade. They're mixed classes.
Yes.
Same at the high school. So to try and do it a year at a time in those two schools is really problematic.
So an estimate of the cost of the devices is $500,000.
Well, the $500,000 is to buy the curriculum.
No, I'm talking just devices, Paul.
Okay.
At $500 a piece, 1,000 devices is $500,000. Okay.
What's the cost of the implementation of the program?
There'll be some curriculum costs. There'll be other technology costs in each
classroom. Think costs that can come out of capital funds will be in the approximation of $500,000. That would be for the four core areas for 4 years, because you're catching up a little bit this first year. that price would increase a little bit, but that's kind of where you're at on curriculum. You've seen the piece on support. There's some other things built into that $500,000 that we've looked at that we may or may not be able to subtract out of it.
And I wish Carl were here because he could speak to this better. The one thing he's repeated to us over and over again, and why he's pushing for us to go faster, he says, I do not want to live financially. It's difficult for me to live in two worlds. Because as we're going slow with the digital conversion, he still has to update labs. He goes,
well,
if we jump to the digital, we can do that.
Yeah, how much of his budget is he committing towards the $500,000 for... Because, see, how we've done the one-on-one is he has supplemented with his... He's not buying labs. So as soon as he can quit buying labs, then that money should be going towards these devices.
That's what paid for the fifth grade. That's what continues to pay for the same thing.
Okay.
He told us when we said 3 years, he said, don't blame the third year
on me.
On me, because I'll do it in two.
Okay.
And I can do it with replacing the labs and the budget.
Of what he's got.
In fairness to him, he may need some help. But we may
well, I know he'll need additional tech help if we add... It's not going to be that. So.
But look at him right now. Look at what he's learned in the last 2 years. He's strategizing. He's buying them now. He's not going to upload those the month of July. He's going to have those done before July. So if we give him the notice, he can get the stuff here and use his text, and he'll be ready for it.
Yeah.
It's planning and giving him notice so that he can schedule it out.
Yeah. That's right. Okay. So, what was the last one I gave you?
Transportation
secretary. Okay. That's just a secretary STE there. And then the last ones that we had on our list was the maintenance 3 change that we talked about for those maintenance folks. We create a new lane. There's only 2 individuals that qualify for that. Then we added PR specialist and resource officer. They're down on our list. They're down there. Those are the things that we had on our list.
Now, one thing that we didn't even consider on our list was any salary increase on base salary.
Right. And every time you do that, it's $300,000.
Right.
That's here.
Yeah. Right.
So I don't know where the board wants to slot that in.
Well, it's priority,
digital conversion over to capital.
With this, you're getting more district specialists at the district office. Mm-hmm. You're talking about cutting their insurance. You got to give them a raise. You can't ask for $100 more a month towards their insurance, not give them a raise, and add district staff to the district office.
I loved your recommendation about not funding gold, funding silver without dental. And if we did that, gives us 420.
If we don't fund dental, then we give them a 1%. Is that even an increase, or is it still a loss?
How much is 1% on a regular teacher's?
I'll work on that.
Okay.
The cost, or how much is it?
How much was an increase?
Like,
how much
money
are they seeing? Right?
35. Let's just say $36,000 a year as a new teacher. So there you go. Divide that over 1% of that, $360.
Okay, so it's 36. You're adding. That's what you have to look at. This is all they see. They're going to see you giving them $36 a month. You're taking the 106 away because you're not funding dental, and you added 2 specialists at the district.
So
office.
They're really you're taking that 70
the,
bucks away.
That is all that
Anne's
they can
right,
see.
That's what they'll see.
That's all they see. That's what you will go through in negotiation.
I got to know: are we as a board committed to keeping 100% premium for as long as we can? I know from my aspect at UVU, we were given significant pressure that we had to start with premium sharing. Are we going to have to face that as a district? Are we going to get pressure from anybody? Maybe not. What about our constituents? Are you hearing from people saying...
Well, I just think that's the real world in the business. I mean, the world that most people have to do that. And as Pete said, most districts...
All I'm saying is when you go to negotiations, it's
going to be
if we do both, it's a real hit.
Yeah.
I don't think that's fair. Our teachers have gone for a long time without a real raise.
Let me throw something out.
And we keep adding money to the fund balance. That's not going to go over big. We add money to the M&O this year. Okay? The teachers will pick that up.
What if you were to give the teachers a 3% salary increase?
Okay.
Now, this isn't saving us money right now. And then you take the premium participation money and you add, you use that to go towards their base. So they start to pay 10% and we start operating in that world, but yet nothing comes out of their check.
Let me help this conversation a little bit. We want to be careful because this conversation here
is an
executive session conversation that we can do in executive session. It's about strategy, about for negotiations. It's the conversation we need to have. But this tape here will be on the website in a few days. Okay? So I suggest we stop that part of this conversation and schedule an executive session to talk about strategies for negotiation. But what we wanted you to get today are the costs of those things. Are the costs for these things.
And Terry, and maybe this is an executive session, but will we get pressure eventually?
Well, I think
no
I can
other
answer
school
that
districts
question.
Are doing premium share. We're the only one that's not. Will we get pressure or not?
From who?
Nobody would pressure us.
Nobody pressures us. What it's done for us is give us a lot more.
Oh,
yes, some.
Some of your, yes, and we have in the past.
But most of your constituents and most of us value our teachers, the professionals. We want to pay them as professionals, and we want to give them more money. We just simply don't have more money in the budget. Do you know what I mean?
We value this as a strategy to help attract and retain, and it's been incredibly good for us for a long time.
That's part of the reason we have 75 people apply for a teaching job in our district.
Yeah.
It is one of the perks that we can offer to be competitive with a Park City.
The other thing I wanted to say as we move, because we will, this is an executive session discussion, but the other thing we haven't considered is when Keith meets with them, really get some numbers as we look at other possibilities of raising deductibles. And I think there's other issues here that we can look
that
at.
We don't
maybe
know
we'll
the
bring
answers.
Down this 18 and a half that
we can live
we don't
with
even
that.
Right.
We'll help
that
us out.
We don't even know.
We don't
that.
Even have the discussion today because right. we don't have the facts.
So that's our priority, and that's what we wanted to leave with the board here today and let you discuss amongst each other. If you have, I mean, we talked about some of these things as they relate. I think we have some feeling about where you're at. We have some pressures as to the need to maybe move some personnel matters forward as it relates to some of these things on the list. But maybe the board would prefer having conversations about that differently. I don't know. For example, the CFA position is one that we need to work on fairly soon, fairly quick. So if the board feels okay with that, I'd like to move on that one. But if you feel like you have to wait for other conversations, then we're going to have to sit on it, obviously.
What about the full-time? It was a given, the high school and the counselor.
We need to, in my mind, we should just
well,
those positions.
Truthfully, we've already hired one of the four in the basketball coach. I mean, it's such an obvious need that we've kind of had to have.
What will he teach? What's his?
No, he's not in the core area.
He hasn't been a core
unless you
teacher.
Know something different.
Well, Sean's worked it out.
He's trying to make a switch because
he's
making
a switch.
So he's working on it. All
right. But it's taken one of those four down to three.
All right. If the board wants
we just can't make a decision because this is a study session.
That's right. That's right.
So, you know, I know everybody knows these are growth. Those positions at the high school and the counselor, in my mind, are growth. And so I don't know.
Well, and I would say the maintenance, or not the maintenance, the transportation secretary is a growth issue, too.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know how you want us to speak to that.
Well,
can that be a part-time to start out with?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. A part-time, again, the logistics of the bus garage is being open when the buses are out and about.
And the clear will force so, them to clear after, so it makes it a long day.
So let me answer your question, and we can talk about this now. All what this is, these are things that would be considered to be part of the budget. So, unless the board says to us, I'm not sure that should be part of the budget, we would proceed as if those things were going to be approved in the budget part of the conversation when you approve a budget. Okay, so, and Ann's right, we can't say, let's make a motion for a sitting. We can't do that in this meeting today. Okay, I'm moving along, assuming that these things are okay, unless somehow later I'm told they're not okay. And so I'm listening very carefully to the conversations here to see if we need to have further conversations about certain things.
Well, we do need further conversations because they're not all okay.
I didn't think they were.
Yeah, we can't do all of them.
I agree with you. So let's
identify the ones that we all
are in favor.
That we feel are...
Can proceed with the budget.
Yes, can proceed with the budget. Let's identify those, and there's four. Let's identify them specifically. Dual immersion.
Yes.
We've already started down that road. That
digital conversion. And high school FTEs and counselor. To me, those...
Mm-hmm. Those are, for me,
those are givens as part of the budget.
Agreed.
Okay. And I get that. Okay. All right. We understand each other. That's how we'll work on preparing the budget to this point. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, any other questions about any of this stuff right now?
Good news tomorrow.
We
hope so.
We hope.
Sorry, my back needs to stretch for a second.
All right. In the rest of the stuff that you have in this meeting,
where do I have that? Here it is.
Because of the time that we have, we've already talked the music program here. Mm-hmm. We've given you a lot of other information from other districts. And I'm kind of glad we don't have time to discuss it right now.
We need to read these.
We've tried to highlight those. You see how they're highlighted?
Okay.
And then we can have another conversation another time. So, Jill, we got them from, I don't know, five or six different districts. Several.
Thank you. Okay,
and
thanks,
what you're going to see, what you're going to see is that they're all different. They're all different. Okay, they're all different, and they all have slightly different emphasis and slightly different procedures. Okay. School Boards Association Convention, we've added to the agenda too. The board just finished some time there. There may be other things that you want us to pay attention to. We've talked about public relations and those kinds of things. But there may be other things.
I mean, I'm thrilled with the digital conversion.
That's a lot of the...
That's exactly what we need.
Yeah, there was a lot of information down there.
Really put into perspective what Paul was saying about where we sit as a district for me and how far along we already are. So that was great.
Thank you. I appreciate them and the effort they put. They spent a lot of time on this year. I appreciate the board's response to that effort. That's great. Other things that maybe you feel like we should be paying attention to that might affect the budget?
I just think we're going to need to see costs on this digital conversion, obviously, as we talk about our small projects and other growth issues that we have in our buildings, that all comes into play. So whether we have a study session once we have
numbers.
Yeah,
I think we're going to need that a little more, aren't we?
On the cost of...
And I guess what we need to do at this point with your permission is to move forward in talking with more specifically with some third-party vendors and seeing what's out there and available as far as helping us move forward with the curriculum piece.
Because that fit, then we can see how we can fit it or where we can put it in those budgets to still meet the goals of getting as much of those buildings retrofitted.
I think we've given you some approximate numbers as far as the curriculum, the personnel, and what Carl's take is on the devices. We'll try and shore those up and get something concrete for you in the near future by next board meeting.
Would it be worth it in that discussion to be able to show this is what we pay right now on textbooks and stuff outside?
Yes.
We've had that conversation.
Yeah, we've talked about that. That's way important.
It's the same as with Carl's. That's going to
Carl's
plan.
Well.
Right. We're doing adoptions anyway, so we're just redirecting those funds.
You need to see how we shifted funds from one place to another to make this thing happen.
$500,000 sounds like a lot of money, but if you'll remember when we did Treasures in Division, it was close to $300,000.
It was $375,000.
What we know exists out there already is a willingness on when some of the vendors' parts to prorate this. Instead of you buying the $70 textbook up front, you get to pay for it over 5 years because they're going to provide it over 5 years. And then they're going to update it, and they're going to help you continue with it. And so I think that's one reason it's as low as it is. And I think there's some ways we can get into this. There is just one information item I probably need to share with you, Superintendent, and probably for the board on a discipline issue that just took place that they probably want to know about. That's what I've been dealing with.
Okay, let's shut that off.
Let's finish this meeting and then do that. So let me go ahead, Debbie.
I just had one other, especially class that I thought was very helpful, and we've talked about just being more doing what we can to be the best forward possible. And one of the presentations was becoming more powerful by creating a strong link between strategic planning, goal setting, and learning sessions. And I just think we can still look at ways to improve that.
We need a whole study session.
Our strategic plan and those goals that we talked about
way before I came on are expiring
right.
in 14.
It's time to do that. I almost put it on here.
We need to probably have talked about that. Okay, that's all.
In your information is the information about the BYU Leaders thing coming up. And an agenda. So if you'll find
that. Is
that
tomorrow? I didn't see that.
No, it's
oh, that's
May
Associates
7th.
Is tomorrow.
Associates
yeah.
tomorrow.
Associates is tomorrow after the
And is that the one that we read this back for?
No, that's
the May one.
Yes. And you'll see.
I was going to have it right here.
Here's that information.
Okay, yeah, I know my reading assignment.
So I gave you the agenda.
I still have it all done yet.
It's in the bag, it's in the other.
Okay. Are you shut us down, Jill?